Love music. Live sport. Let's hear it for the girls with Maury McGonigal and special guests on Rock Sport Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Rock Sport Radio. It's Tuesday night. I'm Maureen McGonigal and this is Let's Hear It for the Girls. So it's my great pleasure to have Rona McLeod with me in the studio tonight. Welcome, Rona.
Thank you.
And we also have her daughter Bria with us. Rona is one of Scotland's most recognisable broadcasters, having worked for the BBC for many years. However, she has recently stepped away from the role to set up her own media company, and I look forward to hearing a wee bit more about what that's all about, as well as many of the interesting tales you might have from your years in the world of sport, Rona.
Oh, hopefully they're going to be interesting.
They are. They're going to be fabulous. So welcome, Rona, and welcome, Bria. But just before we sort of really go into it, we'll do our usual. We'll do our weekly roundup. And I'm hoping you'll join us as we look through the sports for this week. So I'm going to start off with golf and Kimberly Beveridge from Aboyne Golf Club. She worked hard in gusting winds to come out on top against Chloe Godbey in a thrilling Scottish Women's Amateur Championship final. Down by one hole at the halfway point in Sunday's final, Kimberly battled back to birdie the first three holes in the back nine to take her first lead of the match at the 12th hole. A par on 13 was enough to give her a two-hole lead with five to play. So with Little splitting the two players all day, it was Beveridge's sensational approach shot on 18 that would separate the pair as her 8-iron from 131 yards stopped just short of the hole to set up the winning putt. So speaking afterwards, she said, "I struck that last shot really good, actually. It landed probably about 20 feet and rolled down nicely to the hole. The nerves kicked in for that 2-foot putt, but I just went for the stroke and it went in." And in being crowned the Scottish Women's Amateur Champion, she said, "Hearing that sound really good, I'm absolutely buzzing. I didn't expect it, to be honest. I just plodded along and played my own game and came away with the results."
Fantastic.
It's quite nice, isn't it? She's playing the whole thing down, really.
I know. I mean, when you hear the description of what she actually had to do, absolutely nerves of steel. Well done to her. And also there's something very special about being crowned Scottish champion as well. That's just such a landmark in any sports person's career.
And do you think the next move would be for her to look to turn professional, because that's the amateur? I mean, what do you think? It's not an easy route to turn professional golfer. It's an expensive business, Rona.
It certainly is expensive. And I suppose it depends on her own circumstances at the moment and what her ambitions are, how old she is, whether, I mean, it's a hard task to turn professional, and you need so much backup, the time away from home. So I suppose it just depends on what her own ambitions are, and obviously different people get different things out of their sport. Some people, it's very much just a leisure activity for them if they've got a career. Or else you go full bore for the professional life. So, yeah, I don't know enough about Kimberly to know.
Yeah, but we'll watch it with interest.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm going to move on to para canoeing. Britain's para canoe team battled out for the World Championship selection and national titles at the Interclub McGregor Paddle Challenge and Para Canoe Open and National Championships. Wow, that was a mouthful. In Nottingham at the weekend, and Scotland's Hope Gordon finished both rounds in second position with times of 100.95 and 58.41, showing a good improvement going into her second race. She's really happy with her racing and she is looking forward to what the rest of the season has to offer. We're then moving on to rugby, and Scotland Women's Sevens are heading off to Marcosis.
Marcosis.
Going to look at the lady from the BBC who has the pronunciation right, Marcosis.
It might be Marcosis, but it could be Marcosis. Yeah,
you know,
I don't know.
I could have missed it all about altogether and just said near Paris.
That's what I would have done.
I just give myself a headache. So, Scotland Women's Sevens are heading to near Paris this weekend for the first Rugby Europe Grand Prix event of 2019 after a good showing in Hong Kong in April and Biarritz early in the month. Unfortunately, they missed out on qualifying for the World Sevens Series as a core team for 2019-20. However, as we heard last week for the latter tournament, they became the first ever invitational side to win a tie at a World Series event. So, yeah, great to hear.
It's good to hear that the women are, they've had a long, fairly slow journey to get to the higher levels of rugby. And, you know, we've seen in recent years there has been improvement in the Six Nations. This is Sevens. I used to think that this sounded like the best job in Scottish sport when you see where the men's Sevens team go to, and it's all these glamorous cities throughout the world, and to be travelling as a team with all your friends and going to all these amazing places. And Sevens rugby is just so great to watch anyway. So yeah, wish the girls good luck too, and hope that they can build on this wee start that they've had.
I'm not sure whether it is being covered by BBC, because I know they have definitely racked up the coverage of women in sport this summer particularly. But if not, we'll look out for the results and see how they do. So good luck to them.
Yeah, and Heather Dewar, one of my friends, has recently been appointed as a women's sport reporter. So yeah, if Heather's listening, and I can even send her a wee text.
Yes.
But yeah, that sounds like something that's interesting. And the rugby girls are always good talkers. I'm sure they'll be very, very enthusiastic about this opportunity for them.
And as for Heather, I don't think she'll be short of things to do, because she was out in France.
At
I met
World
her at
Cup.
Nice.
Yep.
And also then introduced her to a new sort of concept with squash, where they're going to have hit squash, I think it is. So it's a high intensity training using squashes as a base.
Right.
And so she came out and covered that. So she's doing great stuff for women.
She is doing
sport.
Great. And she's so enthusiastic. And she's just such, she's passionate about sport, and she's passionate about women's sport. And I think she's been a great appointment. She's absolutely worked her socks off. And it's actually quite a nice remit to have, because it means you can just throw yourself into that and do some really good work, rather than kind of get dragged into the daily news, which is often dominated by other sports.
And it's not just about the elite level, it's about all the quirky sides of women in sport as well, which I think so much variety. And I always think that women in sport are really grateful and thankful and pretty good to work with, because they appreciate anyone that takes an interest in their sport.
Absolutely. And I think further than just women in sport, I mean, my experience over the years has been that, and I've covered over 50 sports for the BBC, when you get away more or less from football, people are very, very pleased that you've turned up to cover their sport. Rugby is obviously professional here as well now, but I have to say that the rugby guys as well are very, very happy and very courteous, and they give you good answers. And then when you get into things like athletics and swimming and gymnastics and all these other sports, people are delighted that you give them the coverage. So it's not exclusively a women's sport thing, but I think it's it's when you step away from the big one.
Yes, we won't mention that one, will we? So I'm going on to your sport now, athletics.
Yeah.
Because it was a brilliant sub-4-minute run for Laura Muir, taking second place over 1,500 metres at the Stanford Diamond League in the US, behind reigning world and Olympic champion Faith Kipyegon.
Yes.
Is that how we say that again?
I think that's how we say that one, yep.
Stanford is the seventh stop in the IAAF Diamond League's 10th season. So Laura Muir, I mean, maybe this is one for Bria. Is Laura Muir somebody that you look up to, Bria? I mean, what do you think? Is that someone who has been a role model for you?
Definitely. I mean, she's a different distance from me. I'm more of a sprinter, but to see her achieve kind of so much on such a high level, and someone you kind of, you know, we see her training sometimes at the Emirates, you know, you see her locally and you kind of think she's achieved that much and she's right there. It's quite a big deal to kind of see her train and see what she does and her commitment to everything.
I think the wonderful thing about Laura Muir is the fact that she kept her university work going through. She kept her studies going. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a big ask, because you must train a lot, Bri, and the thought of how do you balance that with your studies?
I think it's a good break from studies as well. Although, you know, she got to the point where her studies were the most important thing to her, and that's, you know, to it was vet she was doing.
She was doing vet, and she did manage to combine her athletics and her vet studies, obviously through most of her degree, but then she didn't go to the Commonwealth Games in the Gold Coast because she had her vet finals to do. And I think that was one of the few times that she had to choose one or the other exclusively.
What a difficult decision to make as well.
Absolutely. I mean, a hard decision to make. And Bria's 16, she's just completed her hires. Yeah. So we'll do a sixth year and then hopefully on to university after that. So Laura is just a fabulous role model because she's managed to do it all, and it takes a lot of organisation and it takes a lot of backup. But Laura proves it can be done.
Yeah. And she does it with some style, doesn't she?
She's so unassuming. Sure. Yeah. She's lovely. She's tiny.
You're going to use the word humble, but that to me sometimes that seems like a bit of an insult, you know, when you say someone's humble. But she doesn't shout about her success. She just actually does her job. She does both her jobs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She's obviously so confident, but she doesn't need to brag, mm-hmm. you know, so she stays humble in that sense that she's not braggy and she's not got a big head. Mm-hmm. She's very, very grounded.
And athletics in general in Scotland, I think they've just recently had such a major boost. And I think a lot of it is to do with they have a great gender balance. They promote both the female and the male side of the sport. And I think there's been great stuff coming out from Mark Munro and his team.
Yeah, I mean, Brie and I were talking about this earlier because obviously I've been doing sports journalism for 25 years. And the gender balance thing is quite interesting to me because in athletics, probably about 10 years ago, we were hardly covering any male athletes at all because they weren't achieving the same level of success as, for example, Ailey Doyle. For me, in athletics in particular, it felt like the girls were getting a really good run for their money from a media point of view, but it was simply because we were just making the same editorial decisions that we would normally make, and they were the ones that were really achieving. Since then, the men have come through, and Scottish athletics is in a phenomenal place at the moment. And maybe Bria can answer this one, but my feelings are that success and that confidence is making its way down to the younger age groups.
Yeah, definitely. There's definitely a lot of guys that I know through training that are doing so well. You know, they're going down to English champs, and you know, sometimes the podium is two Scots out of and one English guy. They're definitely making their mark down south as well, I think.
And last summer, there's a competition called the Celtic Games, mm-hmm. and Scotland have always done fine in it, but last summer actually. I think they won
every age group.
They absolutely dominated this competition, mm-hmm. and I have to say, proud mum moment. My younger daughter,
a couple of shivers here.
I know.
Wow. Come on then.
Our younger daughter, so Coralie, who's 1 year exactly younger than Bria, was selected to run in the hurdles, and she at the time was 14. But it was an under 16 age group. So we were just delighted that she'd even been selected. She normally at that age would have run 75 metre hurdles, but for under 16 she had to move up to 80 metre hurdles, which is further apart. So we were delighted that she was selected, and that was it. And we went along on the day, and you know, blow me, she won the thing. Wow. She won her race, and hers was the very first race of the day. And afterwards
it was.
So she was the first one out. And afterwards, Leslie Roy, who's the president of Scottish Athletics, she said to me, you know, when Coralie did that, nobody expected her to win, but she won. So people thought, well, I can go and I can win. And I think that at this very young age, they are seeing people like Laura Muir, and they're seeing just the plethora of talent that's out there. And they're actually thinking, well, they've come from the same place as me. They've gone through the same system as I am. So why not?
Because we hardly ever have a programme without mentioning Gemma Reekie, because she's just such a lovely character.
Gemma,
you know, she's just so fab, isn't she?
Yeah, Gemma came and she spoke. The girls run for Central AC, and do you remember Gemma came and...
Yeah, she came and spoke to us about training with Laura and what that's like, where she treats every training session like a competition. She's always trying to beat Laura. And I think it shows in recently and definitely in her competitions. She leaves nothing to the end. She, you know, leaves it all out on the track.
Well, it's given us plenty to talk about, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And I think also, you know, with Gemma, with Laura, they are guided by Andy Young and they talk about the Young family, and it's just a great environment for them. And I remember I went and filmed with them, and it was, I think it was in January, and it was a football pitch outside Mulgai and it was snowing. And that's where they were training. And she went and she got her Marks and Spencer's plastic bag and she put it down on the grass and she lay on it and started to do some of her exercises. And so, you know, you see her as this world-leading 1,500-metre runner going around the world and you think, what she actually
there's
does
no
is
prima
not
donna
glamorous.
There is there, no. You know, I need this, I need the next
no.
thing. Yeah,
no, it's just they get stuck in and they're
fabulous.
Hard, they're tough.
Fabulous.
So yeah, they're in a great environment there with Andy.
So we're going to move on to motor racing. I always think it's great to bring in something unusual. And we had Emily Glanville in the show not so long ago. And I just picked up that they're having their first Ladies' Day at Knockhill Circuit. And it's to all intents and purposes sold out, although they have said that there's a reserve list. So the event will offer up to 50 women a chance to get special free introduction to motor racing, including exclusive behind-the-scenes tours, a guided lap of the circuit with a female Stig, access to a full day's Scottish Championship racing action, and the opportunity to take part in an all-women coach karting sessions. This sounds amazing.
It's unheard of to me.
And you know, it's just brilliant because, I mean, 50 women already have signed up. They've got this reserve list. So the Ladies' Day will be the pinnacle event of the brand new SMRC Women in Track campaign, which was launched earlier this year. To grow female membership within the club, the event will offer women the opportunity to take behind-the-scenes tours, and that's by Scottish kart racer Lucy Grant. They also have a race car tour with a Williams F1 mechanic, Isla McKenzie, and visiting the pit wall with the marshalling team and finding out about scrutineering with head environmental scrutineer Linda Hay. So I think they're just trying to show a variety of what happens behind the scenes and how women can get involved.
Yeah, and it's interesting because obviously traditionally motorsport has been a male-dominated sport, but why is that? Is it because they have faster reactions? Do they have faster reactions? Is it just
it's
because
just cultured,
the door's been opened to them rather than women? So, yeah, I mean, this would be really interesting. This would be a kind of nature-nurture experiment if you took 10 boys and 10 girls and gave them the same opportunity in motorsport. How would it play out? So yeah, this is really, really interesting and great that there's an enthusiasm for it as well, the fact that it's sold out.
Yeah, good luck to them. On to hockey, and Scotland's Sarah Wilson, who has twice won our Official of the Year. Sarah's a hot shot in hockey. She's been appointed to umpire the FIH Hockey Pro League final, and that's her 101 match. And I think the other thing that's interesting about hockey is that they have come out with their equally amazing charter. This is from their European body, and they are now in its 50 years, and they've launched this new charter. So what they're hoping to do is promote fairness and justice within the sport and being representative of all within hockey feeling equally, and they want to ensure that everyone at every level, from the boardroom to the pitch, gets access to the same opportunities, no matter gender, age, race, religion or skill, which I think is great. And they've actually making a stand to say that they want at least, they're calling for the election of at least 3 females onto its executive board in August, and is inviting associations to commit to achieving a minimum of 30% from each gender in the boards. Do you think we need this kind of thing to get this balance right, Rona?
Do you know, in hockey, was it, at board level, has it been traditionally a very male-dominated sport? Because it seems from a participation level that there's not really a gender balance
problem. I would agree
with
you. I think it's, again, one of the great sports that when they're promoting it, they promote male and female hockey.
Yeah.
And I've been out. I think recently they've had a few women on. Nicola Pittacast has gone on in terms of marketing. But I think it's like all boards. You know, it's hard to get the old ones out and get the new blood in.
Yeah.
So these things do take a wee bit more time.
Yeah, I mean, I think that in sport where males play, females play, why would there not be gender balance at board level, at umpire level, at everything? And I think hockey is a great example of where it feels to me that there is, you know, a pretty good gender balance in perception as well. I think that at the time of the Olympic Games, people would know as much about the men's team as they would know about the women's team. I don't think that all sports are like that, but I do feel like hockey pretty much has got good balance.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think also what it helps is to let the board understand the issues that women face. If there's a woman, you know, and a group of women on the board that are comfortable bringing this up, it can help change the face of the sport. So good luck to them. It'd be interesting to see exactly how that's played out in the long term.
Yep.
Just a wee quick word for badminton and for Kirsty Gilmour. She was at the European Games in Minsk and it was a silver for Kirsty. She had a fantastic win over the reigning European champion, Line. And I'm not sure how you say that, Karchfeld? Could we make that one up?
It might be
Charsfeld?
Yeah, I've got a friend from Norway whose name is Charsty.
Uh-huh.
And she's a KG, so it might be a Ch.
I'm definitely going to have to read up on how to say
it. I needed to study a few languages before I came on this programme.
However, unfortunately, she didn't make the gold, but she did come away with the silver. And Kirsty again, great, great things from Kirsty Gilmour.
Oh.
Finally to finish up, netball. And they just seem to be moving up these ranks pretty quickly. I think it was only last week we announced that they had become eighth in the world.
And just lo and behold,
yesterday they moved up to seventh.
Great.
Great for them.
Yes.
Just before they go down to Liverpool for the Netball Vitality World Cup. And just at the weekend there, I was at their presentation of their dresses. And it was a great sort of send-off, family uh-huh. and friends. Team were there and lots of really inspiring little videos from netball clubs all around the country. So again, looking forward to Scotland doing well in the Netball World Cup.
I think that netball in Scotland, I think that since the development of the professional team, I just think that the profile of netball, and you have to look at their chief exec, it's clear their chief
Nelson,
exec.
Yeah.
She's just been so dynamic and instrumental, and the profile of that sport in particular has just jumped over the last 2 or 3 years, and maybe that has had an impact. I'm sure it will have had an impact in participation, and the broader the base we can get to develop players, you're going to get more players going through to that international level.
Yeah.
So well done to them.
So we'll look forward to that with interest. And can I say thank you? That's our roundup finished. So we're just going to take a little break. Time for a cup of tea and a wee chocolate digestive.
Oh, lovely.
Unfortunately not for us, Rona.
Everybody at home.
How to break your heart in one fell swoop. And we'll be back with you shortly.
Love music. Live sport. Let's hear it for the girls with Maureen McGonigal and special guests on Rock Sport Radio.
Welcome back to Rock Sport Radio and Let's Hear It for the Girls. I have with me in the studio tonight Rona McLeod and her daughter Bria. And just before we go into chat in a lot of detail about Rona and her exciting life in sport, just let me remind you that if you would like your sports results or events mentioned in our roundup, please get in touch through our social media channels. So you've got Twitter at RockSportDAB or through our Facebook page, RockSport Radio. And just mention Let's Hear It for the Girls and we will read out your results, your events, and if you have something interesting to say, come and join us in the studio. So, Rona, let's get back to you and let's get back to the start, because I'm not sure if people know this, how well-known a fact it is, but you're a former international athlete and a member of the Scotland team for 7 years.
And
that was sprint, hurdles and long jump.
Yeah, absolutely. As a child, I was definitely the kid that ran everywhere and was always asking my parents to time me. And we set up a little hurdles course around the back garden. And I was always just running and jumping. And so soon when I went to primary school and I was playing netball and running, and a PE teacher said, you know, you should think about doing maybe athletics. My mum's a PE teacher. My dad was a racing cyclist and would have played junior football. Apart from that, would have taken away his amateur status as a racing cyclist. So I was brought up absolutely surrounded by sport, and I suppose it just depends on which one I was going to end up doing. So the direction I went in was athletics and hurdled and long jumped. Got my first senior international vest when I was 16. and continued with athletics until I was 23 and got quite a bad knee injury. And back then, there wasn't any kind of medical support for athletes. You know, it's a much, much better system now with the Scottish Institute and everything. But back then, I was just starting out work, actually, at the BBC, having to pay for my own physio, having to try and deal with this injury. I ended up getting knee surgery, but interestingly, it was a general orthopaedic surgeon who afterwards said, oh, your knee looks fine and, you know, you can walk upstairs and things like that. But that's completely different from trying to take the impact of a long jump takeoff. So it kind of ended, it definitely ended prematurely. But the one thing that I would say about it is that I was kind of at the stage of I need to go in one direction or the other. I need to go either in a career direction or go in an athletics direction. And so I ended up, the choice was made. I went in the career direction and then went to 5 Commonwealth Games, which are many more than I would have ever achieved as an athlete.
It's a great way to look at it,
so,
isn't it?
Yeah, it was it was a great compromise.
Yeah, but I think you're right. In terms of the medical profession, their understanding of injuries and what they can do now is so much different than it was 20-odd years ago.
Yeah, and I think that now, I mean, we've seen, Bria and I have seen friends who've been injured, and people are now more persistent in their treatment of it. People will go for surgery, they'll go for the rehab. They know what it takes, and they know that you can actually come back after pretty serious
look at Andy Murray.
Yeah,
I mean, case in point.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And in the athletics world, you know, we know of several athletes who've come back from really bad injuries as well. But back in the day with me, it was almost, oh, well, that's a shame. So what are you going to do now?
Well, of course, you were a girl as well, you know, so, you know, it wasn't as if they were seeing this as going to be your long-term career. They would, you know, their perception would be, well, you know, you've had your fun and that's
perhaps,
it.
I think if I'd been a boy, I probably would have been in the same situation if it was athletics. If athletics was the sport, I don't think it was to do with my gender. I think it was to do with the sport and probably my standard within the sport as well. I think if I'd been identified as a future Olympian, maybe more would have been done. But just at the
level,
we'll never know.
It's actually quite good to say, you know, what could have been.
I know.
But listen, you're still involved because you're a UKA athletics coach, and
yes,
you volunteer with the local club. Is it Central AC?
Central AC. So when the two girls, when my girls started doing athletics, and believe me, it wasn't a foregone conclusion that they were going to be athletes. I was absolutely determined that they would play netball and that they would go swimming and that I wanted them to play hockey and things like that. But when they did gymnastics, they were both
6 years.
I forgot about the gymnastics.
just forgot about those 6 years.
Yeah,
I know. How could I forget about the pleating of hair and sparkly leotards?
Oh, God,
gymnastics for them was phenomenal. They were never going to be the world's best gymnasts, I have to say.
But you enjoyed it.
Yeah, definitely.
They enjoyed it. And actually, what they have transferred from gymnastics into athletics, where they're more physically equipped for it. For example, we went to one of Bria's last competitions and she was standing and she was kind of like a head and shoulders taller than all of the other wee gymnasts. And I think at that point we looked at her and thought, we really need to move her on to athletics.
You're not quite right for this.
And I said, like, you're not quite the body shape for this. So, but I didn't want them to start athletics till they were in high school. That was just something. I've seen so many tiny, tiny kids thrashing themselves running around a track. And, you know, athletics can be quite a hard sport and I wanted them really to have fun. So, you okay? Are we drink? Mm-hmm. But what they took from their gymnastics was just astonishing coordination. They're exceptionally coachable because they've had to be told how to go backwards in air, land on narrow benches and things like that. And their core strength and their upper body strength is phenomenal and compares very, very well to lots of athletes. So for me, it was a perfect pathway to go from gymnastics and then into athletics.
And I think, you know, nowadays what they're saying is you've got to try a variety of sports.
Exactly.
And even when you're focusing on one sport, it's good to have another sport, for the sort of release away from the pressure. But also I think you tend to use the same muscles the same time.
Yeah. Well, I started out in pole vault, remember?
Yeah, when you started in athletics.
The first transition, there was an older boy in the school who did athletics and kind of, I don't know how I ended up talking to him, but he knew I was kind of at that point where I was leaving gymnastics. And he said, well, come try pole vault because it's kind of the closest thing to gymnastics within athletics. You know, you're upside down landing on a mat. I think it was the best transition, I think, to kind of get from a, you know, gymnastics to a track.
Isn't it funny how just a wee conversation like that can actually change
the
course of your life?
I mean, as much as mom's like, do athletics, it was definitely this older boy. I don't know.
It was head boy Tom Chandler coming into Bria's French class, doing a little bit of French tuition and saying, oh.
Me, a small first year.
Yeah. Impressed.
So when Tom Chandler says, come to athletics, that sounds a lot more attractive than when mom says, come to athletics. So yeah, we thank Tom Chandler.
Oh yeah.
So there you are. You're a busy lady, because let's talk a little bit about your career, because you've had two decades. I think 20. Yeah. What do you think sounds the longest, 20 or 2 decades?
It depends whether I'm trying to disguise what age I am or or emphasise how much experience I have. So when I want to appear like I'm younger, it's 2 decades. And when I want to appear like I've had loads of experience, it's 24
years.
24 years.
Yeah,
24 years.
24 years. I mean, most of your working life has been with the BBC.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Did you always know that you wanted to get into sports? You know, because you were saying, you know, you had these hopes in terms of athlete, but in terms of a career, was it something you knew you always wanted to do?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't.
I expected you to say yes, Rhona. Uh-huh. Now you've taken me out of my comfort zone.
So this is another you never know which way your life is going to go kind of stories. So when I was growing up, there probably weren't any female sports journalists, because Sally McNair was the first, but Sally didn't do it for very long. So, and I think Sally would concede as well that Hazel Irvin was probably Scotland's first full-time sports journalist. Hazel's only a year older than me. So there was nobody that I could, when I was at school, there were no examples of anybody that I could follow. So sports journalism wasn't even in my head. When I was all through school, I was definitely better on the English and language side. So I was earmarked to be a lawyer. So that's what I thought that I was doing. And I went for my work experience with a law office. But then when I got into fifth year, I got glandular fever and didn't really attend school very much because I was quite unwell. And so my higher results were not good enough to get into law. So then I'm, you know, it's a horrible time in your life. You just think your world is over. But I was fortunate that I had my athletics at that point. And so I actually went to the States on a sports scholarship, because they didn't care so much about my Irish results. They were more interested in getting a long jumper and hurdler to run on their track team. So I went there, and when I was there, the subjects that I studied were English, French and broadcasting. And the American universities at that time were so much more advanced than the Scottish ones in terms of broadcasting and media. So I was there and I was doing radio programmes and doing television programmes, and that was what really gave me the love for it. And while I was over there, my mum wrote to me or phoned me and said, oh, there's a competition on Radio Scotland for young presenters. And it was on the Tom Ferry show, which was late night music show. They were looking for young presenters. And so my mum, bless her, realised this might be an opportunity. And so I had to go to a gig and I went to see the Bluebells, and then I did a report. Did a voice report for it, entered the competition, and with others, four of us were selected, and that was really what kind of started me into it. So I worked at the BBC initially not in sport but in music programmes, and I worked as a researcher for McGregor's Gathering, the radio programme. And my big break in sport came because Alison Walker, who was working for Radio Scotland, became pregnant, and there was an opening for a maternity leave cover, and because I was a woman and she was a woman.
That's fascinating.
That's how I got in.
That is a story that I have never
heard. Did you not know
before?
That? No.
No.
Yeah, so just, you know, lots.
Fortuitous, isn't it?
Lots and lots of, yeah. And
sliding doors.
Yeah, and uh-huh. And that's something that I'm so keen that young people understand, that you just may feel like the biggest door in the world has been slammed in your face, But you have to look sideways and you have to look for other openings. And
it's also about learning to take your opportunities. Don't be, you know, so single-minded that an opportunity turns up and you think, well, no, because I want to do X, Y. You can always go back to that. Take the opportunity. Keep that in mind.
Yeah.
Don't turn it down. But tell me, because it doesn't sound as if you did, but did you come across, you know, it's a male-dominated field. You're talking about Alison Walker, Hazel Irvine. You know, there's so few of them, we can name them.
Yeah, and I'm kind of number three in that list.
What was it? Was it difficult breaking through this male-dominated environment?
Do you know, it's been a funny one. I would say that the vast, vast, vast majority, and I'm talking like 98% of the sports people, and a lot of them have been footballers and rugby players, a lot of guys, all of them treated me with great respect and as a professional. I think that the difficulties came from other sports journalists, male sports journalists, and I have been called a stupid wee lassie when I've been trying to do interviews. I can remember being at Clyde Football Club, and after the game we all had to kind of run downstairs to get the manager's interviews, and there was a newspaper journalist there who said, "What are you doing here? You're just a stupid wee lassie." So. Yeah. That kind of thing.
Does that just make you more determined?
I just think you're stupid. You know, it's like, well, I know I'm much smarter than you.
You become a threat. That's the problem. Yes. And they don't know how to handle that threat, you know.
Yeah, yeah. But no, I have to say that I don't honestly think that my gender has held me back at all.
Well, obviously not. Look where you've reached.
Yeah. And I don't know, maybe my background in sport has helped as well, because I've just had to kind of knuckle down and get on with it. And I think athletics is a great example of everybody is treated the same. And I always just felt like, you know, one of the team, whether it was a boy team, girl team, it didn't bother me to work in a male environment at all. So, no, I have to say I haven't really felt it.
Oh.
And when you see so many female journalists coming now through in sport, then I think, yes, we have paved the way for them. I think the one thing that I think, which is quite interesting, I was speaking to Alison and to Hazel at my BBC Leaving Do, and we were talking about now how the female sports presenters present themselves in terms of what they wear and things like that. And we all felt like we would have never dressed like that, because we felt back in the day that we needed to be taken more seriously. Yeah. And so we almost wore men's suits because we felt like that would have us taken more seriously. So,
and that would be an unconscious thing in your head in terms of what you wore.
I think we just felt like we couldn't be seen to be wee lasses. And the last thing that any of us would have wanted was for our sex to exploit our own sexuality, if you like, to get jobs, to get interviews. You know, that was just not acceptable. So, it's a bit more relaxed now, I think.
But that's quite a fearsome trio, that Hazel, Alison and
me, you
wouldn't
want to.
Yes, I don't think we would mess with that trio. But listen, you've been involved in 5 Commonwealth Games, 2 Olympic Games.
Yeah.
I mean, that's crazy. And you've covered over 50 sports. So how have things changed in the sporting world, you know, in terms of women in sport, which obviously we're focusing on? Do you see a sizeable change towards acceptance that women can participate and should participate in sport?
Yeah, I think so. I think over the years it has changed enormously. Quite interestingly, though, I found an old newspaper cutting that I wrote about the Scottish women's football team probably 25 years ago.
I read it, yes.
Did you read it?
Yes.
Did you think that some of the themes still exist, or did you see the change over the years?
I think there's a bit of both. I think if you scratch the surface, some of those themes do still exist, but I do think there's major, major changes.
Yeah.
And we're in World Cup fever at the moment, and I think the country has got behind our female players.
I think it's been phenomenal, especially the role models and for young football players. And I think now, I mean, certainly when I was in high school or primary school, I wouldn't have thought about football, but now it's just as much. You know, there's a lot of good girl footballers in your school as well. So I just hope that we really take this momentum and run with it and the bubble doesn't burst. You know, now is the time, now is the hour.
Yep.
We've got to make the most of this commercially and from a media point of view. You know, this has to keep going.
For me, I think it's Pandora's box. Mm. It's out there. It won't go back again, but it's how it's handled and how it's promoted. Again, by those in positions of authority, understanding what they need to do to get women and girls involved in sport. And there's lots going on to help them understand it. So there's no excuse.
No, and we say, if you look at the major football clubs and the SFA, the doors are open now for women. It's not quite, they're not being paid the same wages or anything like that. But there are definitely concessions being made and doors are opening, and hopefully it just grows and grows and grows, and then parity eventually will be closer.
It'll just be the norm. Now, let me see. This is a list. This is a long list. So your other television credits include both presenting and reporting on Report in Scotland, News and Sport, Children in Need, The Adventure Show, Sport Nation, the Scottish Rally Championships, Blair Horse Trials and the Great Scottish Run. That's probably just to mention a few. So, I mean, it just sounds like a really interesting career and a glamorous job. Is it one you would recommend? And if so, what kind of advice would you give to someone starting out?
Yeah, it is one that I would recommend. And so many times in my working career, I've just felt I am so privileged to be doing this and to have this experience. So, I would say go for it. If you fancy it, go for it and get experience. The world has changed so much from a media point of view since I started out, because now anyone can be a journalist. If you've got a smartphone, you can be filming, you can be recording interviews, you can be publishing in the sense of getting it on the internet. So what I would say is go out and show your stuff, show that you're capable of filming something, asking interesting questions, responding to interesting answers. The opportunities are there, but you just have to take them and not be shy about going out there and seeking opportunities, because, you know, to be a journalist, you've got to be brave enough to push doors open.
And I think you're absolutely right. In terms of Bria, in terms of what your mum or what I would have looked upon as being a success story in the media, mm-hmm. is such a wide thing now, because it's all about the social media influencers. Is there anyone particularly in athletics that you follow that is a social media influencer?
I follow a lot of athletes on social media. You know, I always keep up with what Laura's posting, and it's always, you know, her training abroad or something in the freezing cold. There's no one really, you know, massively, but I think, you know, all the athletes I follow, Scottish Athletics, you know, IAAF, so I keep up with all of that stuff.
With that,
it certainly makes it a lot more accessible.
Because it's a great way, isn't it? A great way. Uh-huh. So, BBC, that's old hat. You're moving out on your own now. that was yesterday's news.
Well, I may be doing some stuff for them in the future, but in a different capacity.
So this is a big decision you've had to make this time without having it taken away from you in terms of the decision when you were young and
netball. This one's in my terms.
So this is in your terms. Yeah. So why now?
A variety of reasons. I did find that I was sometimes sitting in news meetings and we were discussing things that we seemed to have discussed 20 times before. Every, you know, the same subjects just came up, rounded up every year. I'm absolutely passionate about sport, about opportunities in sport, about all of these sports that I grew up loving, and, you know, swimming and athletics. And I just felt like the Scottish media doesn't need another journalist who's going to go and do a Celtic preview or debate whether Scott Brown over-celebrated a goal. I'm a grown woman now, and I just think that my time, my passion, my efforts could be used now to kind of further opportunities at grassroots level. So that's what I'm interested in.
You just need another challenge. So keep your eyes open for what's going to happen in the future with McLeod Media.
Exactly. Yeah, everybody follow them, McLeod Media, on Twitter, and you'll see what happens next.
What is your Twitter handle?
It's at RMcLeod Media.
Right, there you are, folks. If you want to hear what Rona's up to next, it's RMcLeod Media. But one of the big things in your life is family and sport. You've got two girls.
Yeah.
Coralie and Bria.
Coralie and Bria, yep.
Both involved in athletics.
Yep.
what is your hope for them? And then we'll ask Bria what she thinks she would like to do for herself.
So my hope for them is, first of all, to be happy and to achieve all their dreams, whatever their dreams may be. At the moment, sport is playing a very, very nice, happy part of their lives. They've both achieved well. They're both Scotland junior internationalists. But it's an unpredictable sport. Bria's had an injury for quite some time and is fighting to get back from that. But that all, you know, it's all good life lessons. So I'm kind of old school as well, though, that I want them to do well in school, because athletics, you know, who knows what they could, they're probably not going to make a living from it, if we're honest. And that's no downer on them. It's just that the ones who actually can make it to the very top are so, so few. So we need to have a good backup plan of an education and a qualification as well. So, but first and foremost, you know, happy. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I don't need them to win gold medals.
It's yeah. nice, but
it's nice, but it's, you know, other things make you happy.
Yeah. What about you, Bria? What's your thoughts and ambitions for the future?
I mean, coming back from injury right now, I guess, you know, my ambition just to get back competing, to be honest, at the moment. Like my mum said, you know, I don't think I'm gonna be, you know, some big professional moneymaker through it, but no, I think I want to take it as far as I can, and it's something that makes me happy and that makes school easier sometimes. You know, I'm going through hires, and to have, you know, to know I'm going to training kind of was a break for my brain in a ways, which I think actually helped me during my study leave. There's always kind of, I've always had the thought of, because my dad's American, so he, you know, went to uni in America, and he always, the thought, you know, the idea of going to America for university is always kind of been in my, on my mind, I guess. It's obviously very expensive, so the way there, I guess, is a sports scholarship. And, you know, for that, you've got to keep up my athletics, so I guess, you know, take it as far as I can and get as much out of, you know, get as many opportunities as I can through it. But, you know, first and foremost, I think it's just something I enjoy, and to just keep enjoying it, I think, is the
Well, you've got a great, I mean, you've got great family support, the parents that understand.
Yeah, and Bruce, my husband, he's, you know, when I met him, he was working for the US Olympic Committee. He's heavily involved in the business side of sport. His mum was a PE teacher. His dad was a PE teacher. You know, we're just surrounded by sport.
The fit family.
Yeah, we're the most, I think we must be the most boring family ever, because we're just constantly surrounding ourselves with sport. Yeah, but, you know, when it comes down to it, you're a mum and you're a dad and you just want your kids to be happy, and whatever makes them happy is absolutely fine by us.
But you also use your fitness and your sport for good.
Yeah.
You know, because your challenge at the weekend, give us a little insight in how on earth you managed to do that. Rona, tell us what you did and why
you
did it.
I'm a little bit sleep deprived. On Saturday night, I and about 400 other women went from Queen Margaret University in Edinburgh and rode our bikes through the Edinburgh night for 100 kilometres. So big circuitous route, which ended up quite nastily having to ride our bikes up Arthur's Seat.
Wow.
Yes, it wasn't really
fun
at that time.
What time was that?
So, well, we started at 9:30 and there were 3 stops for cups of tea and jelly babies and bananas and cake. And I have to admit to the cake. And we finished about 5:00 in the morning, so the sun was up. And it was to raise money for 3 female cancer charities, for Joe's Cervical Cancer Trust, Ovarian Cancer Action and Breast Cancer Care. And we did it because one of my best friends, who's a day younger than me, went for her first mammogram, routine mammogram, in November and discovered that she had breast cancer. Which was a total shock. She's done Ironman competitions, she's run marathons, so she's well now, all good. But Lynn's response to this was, let's take on a physical challenge and raise some money. So I said to her, I want to do it with you. So yeah, rode my bike for 60 miles on Saturday over Sunday.
What a better person to ask than yourself. Rona, you're not going to believe me, but we've run out of time.
Oh, well, it's been a joy. Thank you so much for asking
so
us.
Thank you to Rona and Bria. And we have the debate about the song. Who's going to introduce the song?
Do you want to do it?
I'll do it then. But yeah, so it's I'll tell you why we've chosen it. This is loud in our car when we were driving as a family, and because of my love for my family and my husband and his American influence. So what we're going out with is Guns N' Roses' Sweet Child of Mine.
Thank you very much.
Love music. Live sport. Let's hear it for the girls with Maureen McGonigal and special guests on Rock Sport Radio.